we've been focusing on a practice known as Lojong, which is a traditional Tibetan Buddhist practice that is meant to help people who are interested in the Dharma find ways to remember the teachings. Right, so often we're curious about our well-being. We're curious about what would help usher in a sense of wellness and less suffering, less anxiety. But it's not always easy to remember, right, what helps and what reduces the suffering. So often, I know from personal experience, we get habituated, right? And even if we're habituated to doing things that don't necessarily reduce suffering, it's very compelling to continue doing what we're accustomed to doing. And so this practice of Lojong, which translates as training the mind, right, training the mind, is a series of pithy teachings, right, very concise one-sentence teachings that then have more extensive commentary. But those pithy teachings are just a way to reconnect, right, with a sense of what helps us feel calmer, less anxious, right, less worried, less agitated, the various ways that we have a tendency to suffer. And so today, I'm going to say a few words about a pithy teaching that is intended to help those of us interested in the Dharma remember what are known as the five points, the five powers. And I'll read the exact phrase is a summary of the essential instructions, train in the five powers. A summary of the essential instructions, train in the five powers. And I'm going to walk you through what those five so-called powers are. Traditionally, these are teachings that are used both for living and for dying. Today, we're going to focus on living. But we'll get to the dying part. So the first point or power is aspiration. Aspiration. And some of you may know that this past week was Tibetan New Year, was Losar, and it was a 3-day process, so I was in prayers with my teacher, Kempo Pema Wangdak. And he spoke a little bit about, am I speaking loudly enough?
Well, I'm just going to record it. Okay.
If you can't hear me, please let me know. Do you need me to speak up a bit? Mm-hmm. A little bit. Okay. So when I was with Kempo Pema Wangdak doing our Losar prayers and New Year prayers, he was talking about aspiration and how prayer really is the aspiration to be fully awake, right? Or the aspiration to be enlightened. Which really means, if we try to boil it down, the capacity is simply to enter into our experience, whatever that experience might be, but without the customary reactivity, right? Without the defenses that say, not this, I'll enter into that, but definitely not this, or I'll be receptive, I'll be curious, I'll be connected, if I get that. But since I got that, forget about it. I'm not going to engage. So this teaching of aspiration, such a helpful reminder that we can set the intention to aspire to be fully present. Right? For most of us, that's really quite challenging to do. But if we cultivate the aspiration, then it becomes harder to forget that that's what we're interested in. Now, something that Kimpo Pema was talking about is that we have all sorts of aspirations, right? This is, I think, part of the human condition, is to continue to aspire for all sorts of things. It's just that so often what we're aspiring to and for doesn't actually help us feel well, right? And so if we were really to bring some clarity to that aspiration, often it's, I aspire to have people think I'm fantastic and not be so difficult. I aspire to have concrete resources, not that that's unnecessary, of course we need them. I aspire to have very particular experiences, right? So there are a lot of conditions that we have a tendency to place on those aspirations. In the Lojong practice, the idea is to really aspire, right, very consciously, even first thing in the morning, may I be well for the benefit of all. May I work skillfully with my mind and my heart in order to reduce suffering. Right. May I be curious about all beings. Right. May I appreciate how extraordinary this life is. Right. You can just play with the prayers. But the practice really involves cultivating that aspiration so that it gets woven into our experience. And in the traditional commentaries, practitioners are encouraged, as soon as they wake up, right, before we get out of bed or out of the futon, out of the chair, to begin with that process of aspiration. So that it becomes a bit of a roadmap for the day. Yeah. And it's very helpful, I have found. I noticed last night when all of my modem went out, the computer went out, the phone went out, the cable went out, everything went out at the same time. I started to get very agitated, and then there was a beeping, and I didn't know where the beeping was coming from. And so I noticed my reactivity of, this is not okay, I don't accept it. And I was feeling it, and I was reactive, and then I noticed, all right, you're getting a little agitated here. And you could take a breath and call somebody you know who knows more about this stuff than I do. And I did, and my lovely computer person arrived 45 minutes later to help me, so what a blessing. But then I remembered my teacher, who will often say in the midst of something unexpected, this is exciting. And I thought, yes, right, this is something unexpected. Rather than feeling that it's unacceptable and therefore I can't be okay, which is often the visceral feeling, that aspiration of may I be well for the benefit of all really comes to mind. Right? Because Charlie, my lovely computer guy, he's not going to be helped if I'm freaking out so much that he then feels responsible for what's happening with the modem, right? That plants a seed. And in the Buddha Dharma, there are lots of teachings about how the contents of the mind plant these seeds, right? That do ripen. And so it's not that the reactivity is a bad thing or it's a shameful thing, right? Because it's human. We all have our triggers. But this process of aspiring to be fully awake, right, to be filled with compassion and wisdom and patience, generosity, all the skillful means, it actually plants a seed that can ripen even in the midst of reactivity. Yeah. And then that can change the course of what's happening. Now, my computer debacle is a very benign example of the unexpected happening. Of course, we deal with much more provocative experiences, right, of loved ones suddenly becoming ill, right, of losing people we depend upon in sudden ways, right? So the opportunity for that reactivity is ever present. It's so tempting, I have found, to lose peace of mind, right? Lose that sense of well-being if the unexpected is happening. Even if it's unexpectedly joyful, sometimes we get overstimulated or nervous about it, and that can interrupt peace of mind.
Yeah. That's stage fright.
Stage fright.
I think. You get excited before you go on and you get nervous.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, right? So it could be something very lovely that we're anticipating, but the self-consciousness, the stage fright, generates anxiety. And so this pithy teaching of aspiring, right, is really just a way to help the mind stay oriented toward what helps us and all beings feel well. And then right before we go to sleep, there's another wonderful opportunity, right? And you'll come upon this in the commentary quite a bit. To take a few moments just to allow the mind and the body to settle, to do a little bit of review, a gentle review on the day. Right? Were we supported by our morning aspirations? Right? Were we able to navigate what we had intended to? Or not? Right? Did the mind take over in ways that we hadn't planned on? Or did life circumstances, right, generate a response that we then regret? And if so, just to bring that non-judgmental awareness to what we notice, whatever happened, right, without any shame. This is what happened. And then again, to aspire, right? May I be fully well, right? May I be filled with a sense of ease, with compassion, right? With love, for the benefit of all, right? That's the bodhicitta aspiration. So that when we're embarking on our own well-being, we really feel that it's for everyone. It's not just for us personally, in a separate way.
Is that written somewhere that I can remember?
Bodhicitta?
What you just said, may I be well? Is that written down somewhere?
Yeah, yes. You can definitely find those prayers in any Lojong commentary. I'll also give you some more resources for other prayers. Absolutely. And sometimes it can be helpful too, right before going to sleep, right, to aspire to have dreams that offer illumination, right? May these dreams help me address my personal struggles for the benefit of all beings. And it's not quite as New Agey as it might sound to some of you, right? Even many clinical psychologists, I know a few who are focusing on dreams and addictions and compulsions at Harvard, who have a lot of data now backing up how healing it can be to work with our dreaming mind more intentionally, more consciously. So rather than letting the mind, this is often what happens, right? We want to just let the mind go wherever it's going to go, wherever it feels drawn to go, both in our waking and in our dreaming state. And to some degree, I think that's helpful, right? Just to be playful with the mind, notice where it's going, not be coercive with it. But in the Lojong teaching, the idea is that we can really help the mind. Right, so right before sleep, may this experience offer needed clarity. Right, may it help me suffer less in ways that benefit others.
Yeah, it seems like I've heard of studies, with Hindu practitioners,
mm-hmm.
and they found that they can direct their dreams and they really kind of never sleep,
uh-huh.
because during the time that we would sleep, they're actually consciously directing their dreams.
Yes, there are fascinating accounts, and I'm definitely not there yet. I need my sleep,
right.
Like
exceptionally.
Yes. And of course, it is possible to just bring a heightened awareness to our experience of our dreaming life, right? And even potentially to have lucid dreams, right? Dreams where there's an awareness of dreaming, which can be very interesting. But I want to just leave you with that first teaching of aspiration, right? And perhaps even just to reflect on, what do you aspire to and for? Yes.
I was just wondering, because I'm just learning about all of this, Lojong, but at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
thinking about what's happened, I try to end up with sort of a short or long list of things that I'm grateful for.
Lovely.
That happened during the day, even if I don't resolve other things that maybe were making me anxious.
Yes.
Even if it's one or two things.
Yes. Yeah, it's such an important point, right? The possibility of ending one's day with some awareness of what you're grateful for. And this dovetails really powerfully with the teachings of bodhicitta. And so sometimes I'll do that too. You know, even if it's been a rather challenging day, right, a very stressful day, you know, just to bring some awareness, if you happen to be in a quiet room, right, or if you happen to have ventilation, right, or a mattress that's working for you, or if you happen to go to the post office and the person helping you was very helpful and wanting to help you get what you needed. Right? They seem like such benign, unimportant moments, but they're very meaningful. They're so meaningful. And they can actually save us, right? Sometimes we're in such acute pain that one person being impatient, right, one person being a little disrespectful can really get in there in a way that's quite harmful. And conversely, one person saying, how can I help you? Is there anything else you need? It really gets in there and affirms that we're real, we can be seen by another, that our needs matter too. So thank you. Yeah. Okay, so the next point is the power of habituation. Right? The power of habituation. And we all know how powerful our habits are. That's where I began our conversation today. Some of us have habits that we're grateful for, because we're aware that those habits help us stay relatively well. And whether it's the habit of making a breakfast that works for our body, or it's the habit of walking for a half an hour, whatever those habits are that we appreciate, right? So too we have habits that we're aware generate suffering, right? Sometimes it's a mental habit, right? A habit of getting immediately angry with someone who's not listening to us, or a habit of getting immediately anxious when something unexpected is happening. But in all faith traditions, there's an appreciation for how powerful our habits are, and that we can actually work with that, right? And try to habituate what generates our well-being. Yeah. And this is why we have spiritual community, right? This is why we have places like All Souls, and we have temples, and we have places where we can go to habituate, right, our awareness of what's most meaningful, and then to reinforce that meaning making. And that's also really what meditation is, right? It's just the opportunity to help gather the mind to arrive in what actually facilitates a sense of peace, a sense of clarity, insight, right? All the things that help us feel freed up. But perhaps you also know the experience of conceptually being interested in something, theoretically being interested in something like meditation, but then finding the ongoing practice a little bit more challenging. Yes, I see some nodding heads. Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because our minds are very curious. And most of us, right, we have an ear for what sounds like it's a good idea. Sure, meditation, why not? Right, rather than watching something on Netflix or yelling at my neighbor, why not meditate for 20 minutes? Seems to make sense. But then really cultivating the habit is the next challenge. And sometimes it can be helpful to remember that the idea is not to feel, again, internally coerced, or to feel a little badly, a little ashamed if we're not doing it. But really just to remember that we can habituate ourselves, right, to orient around what really generates deepest well-being. Yeah. And this, I think this is why our great teachers inspire us. Right, people like His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Pema Chodron, right, and in all faith traditions. The mentors who inspire us do so because they're oriented around what's healing. And then we feel it, right? We feel it in their presence, that their mind is used to being connected to what's truly meaningful. And they're less inclined to be pulled away, right, by our less pressing but seemingly very compelling issues and stressors. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. All right. So just a few more words so we can cover these 5 points. All right, we have aspiring, we have habituating. And then the next point in power is exposing. Yeah, exposing. And as a clinician, some of you know I'm a psychoanalyst in addition to a Dharma practitioner. I really appreciate this particular teaching because it's a very psychologically oriented one. The idea being that we're complex, right? We have so many layers of the mind, right? So many different facets of our history that we might have a very noble intention, but then the unconscious has its own agenda, right? Thus, we intend to meditate, to walk mindfully, to speak with respect and kindness and patience to all beings. And then something else is happening entirely. And so this teaching of exposing is really meant to just have a look what's actually going on internally. Right? What was getting stirred that then got enacted? And then, of course, the key is to expose to oneself, right, what you notice without judgment. And that's the hard part. Right, so to use my example, it's a little embarrassing how agitated I got when everything went out.
Oh, right? We don't know what that's like at all.
Yeah, right. You might identify, but you might also identify with the overreaction. Boy, I really just lost it. And then half an hour later, it was resolved. I could have spared myself and others the upheaval, the tumult.
Well, you're lucky you have somebody to call.
Yes. I'll give you his number. He's great.
I have no idea when it's going to stop. So.
No, it's scary, right? When you feel alone with something, often this is a trigger. You're absolutely right. And I appreciate you saying that, because I have felt the overreaction. I'm fidgeting with all these wires, and I'm thinking it's over. People are going to need to reach me. I'm not reachable. Something could happen, blah, blah. I'm calling Charlie, right? And that's actually the mindfulness for me. What could interrupt this, right? I have a pattern, I think, of getting anxious for me around technology because I don't understand it. Right? And in the olden days, I would just get lost in the freak out. I would get stuck. We all have our triggers. For me, that was a trigger. And my mind would get fixated on this, what felt like a tragedy. It was just a snafu, but in the moment, it felt like a tragedy, right? I have an article due tomorrow, and I have 12 students who are expecting letters for their doctoral application. I mean, none of it can happen. It can, right? I have patients, blah, blah. The mindfulness is, okay, this is what you're feeling, right? This is hard for you, so a little bit of compassion. Is there something that could help, right? That's the investigation. Is there someone who could help? Right? And then, as we talked about in our last gathering, the non-identification, the pulling back a little bit to see, oh, I am part of the human family, and I probably have a few million other people with me in this moment who are also freaking out because their modem is out, their computer is down, their phone doesn't work. I have company in this experience. It's not happening uniquely to me. It doesn't mean that it's easy, but sometimes that awareness, it can just shift the state of mind. So the exposing for me was, all right, look, this will probably happen again. Do I have to continue to freak out every single time? Is it actually helping me or anybody else? Probably not. what could I do, right, to shift this experience? Yeah. And so the exposing, again, it's not meant to make us feel badly about our problems, because we all have them, but really just to shine a light on especially those more entrenched problems that could shift, that could get better. Right? So the intention is always, how could I reduce suffering? Right? How could I usher in more well-being?